The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn, plan that wedding.
Matthews. Hello. We're so happy that you're listening to us right now. I'm really excited about this episode, actually.
Me too.
Put it out there.
They're such a lovely couple.
Super fun one to record, and we were together. And, well, we weren't together, but we were both on the recording, and our guests were together, shoulder to shoulder, while we video chatted with them, and it was really fun.
It was just lovely. I seem to have an English accent. It's not great, but
it's good.
The reason being is that I'm watching The Crown.
Yes, so proper English.
Yes.
Are you watching Ted Lasso?
I was watching Ted Lasso, and I stopped, but I need to start again because our BFF, Jamie Lee, is a writer. So.
Yeah.
I don't like to wait. This is the problem. I don't like to wait. I want to watch all of the episodes back to back whenever I'm ready to watch them. So as soon as I'm done with The Crown, I'll probably move on to Ted Lasso. And I like it because there's some English people and then, you know, Ted himself is American.
Texan. It's a very good show.
Just like Christy Matthews.
Very much enjoying it. And, yeah, I like how it has a lot of jokes about the two cultures there, American and British. Anyway, I was going to try to bridge that into today's, like,
well,
they're blending things on Ted Lasso.
But two
yeah,
cultures.
Two cultures blending
yeah.
into one show.
Yeah, that was cool. You did. I think you did it.
All right.
I would say that was pretty successful, except for the fact that you, like, called yourself out.
Called it out, yeah. All right, well. I'm tired. I'm not firing off
quite
of all
right.
cylinders
quite
right now.
Quite all right. Don't worry about it. Get on with
okay,
it.
Okay, so it's been a while since we had this conversation with our guests who are a married couple, Lara and Amer. And Amer is Muslim. Lara was raised Universal Unitarianism was the faith. It's I don't even know if we would call that a church. A spiritual group, all my parents' meetings for PFLAG in Texas, they all take place at a UU location, and they call it a church, but I don't know if UU people call it a church.
Huh.
So Universal Unitarianism. And that was in the American South where Lara grew up. So these two humans meet the old-fashioned way, Tinder, and they ended up getting engaged. They have this great love story, and bringing their families together for their wedding was something that they went into not fully expecting it to be as fraught as it was.
Yeah.
And that is not because anybody wasn't trying. Like, everybody was like on board. They supported the marriage, their families, they were into it, but blending the cultures, religions, families, traditions, how people celebrate is very important to them, especially with like close families when lots of generations are going to be involved. So Lara and Amer learned that how they celebrate their wedding and how they celebrate their marriage was going to be tricky. So the way I connected with Lara at first was through Instagram, and I think I reached out to ask if I could share one of her wedding photos, which I did. So you've seen that. And also on the episode graphic for this episode, it's a picture of them. They're beautiful. The wedding was beautiful. It definitely blended a lot of aspects of both of their cultures and backgrounds. So Laura and I connected. I saw that she has this Instagram page called Blended Bliss, blended.bliss. And she started that as kind of like a side thing while wedding planning. And they talk about it in this episode, but it was a project that made her feel good. And I think like helped to make her feel less alone in this process.
Yeah.
About like inspiring other couples to embrace all the parts that they want to in order to celebrate their union their way. And it's a gorgeous account and
there's
feed. And
really
I know she puts
cool
a lot of time into it.
I love this.
She does like a ton of research and reaching out to make sure that she's like representing as many cultures as she possibly can.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful and it's really inclusive and diverse. And we just love it. It's a great resource for us even especially for pulling pictures that we want to put on our grid and share with all of you. So check it out and give her a follow. And I think there's takeaways in this episode for anyone planning a wedding, just like we say in the intro.
Yeah, this Instagram account is right down our alley. I would say my favorite photo here is Michael Caine's wedding photo. You have to see this.
From back in the day.
Back in 1973. Oh, yeah. I enjoyed talking to this couple very much. It was super insightful. Very, very interesting. They are a lovely couple. They're fun. They're funny. And, you know, they just got, you know how you meet people and you're like, yeah, that person has a real good head on their shoulders. Like, that's how you feel about them.
Yeah. We could hang with them for sure.
Totally hang with them.
Yeah. We'll give them a call. gosh, I'm like lost because I'm scrolling through the pictures
Stop
now,
and there's so Instagram. Many
gorgeous pictures on her on this page. It's hers because she runs it. But blended.bliss, seriously.
Yes. All right, let's get to it. Let's let the people hear this lovely couple. Here is our interview with Laura and Amer.
Hi, I'm Laura Wagner.
Hi, I'm Amer Ahmad.
And we're a married couple, and I am the content creator and founder of Blended Bliss, a Instagram account that helps interracial, multicultural, and interfaith couples plan their weddings.
And I'm Laura's husband.
Very good. And I actually connected with you initially through that Instagram account, mm-hmm. Which was very impressive to me. First of all, your picture, I think, is the one I saw on somebody else's account and then went back to yours. And then it's impressive because you do a lot of, what are those called, Michelle, when it's like many photos in one post?
Carousel thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a roundup.
Yes, which is so great because everyone I click on, there's like seven more behind or, you know, so I know that takes time. I'm the one who runs ours. And it takes a lot of like hunting for those photos and the credit. And so I really, really encourage anyone listening to check that out. You can even do that while you're listening right now. It's blended.bliss on Instagram. And you'll see a picture of our lovely guests, but also many, many multicultural relationships. And I appreciate your elevator pitch there. I wrote down like celebrating all the ways couples blend cultures, religions and ethnicities into their weddings as a possible topic or title for today's episode. So thanks for doing what you do and for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to be here speaking to you about something that is a true passion project and something that we've experienced ourselves. And I think we really wanted to convey the idea that you are not alone if you are in a multicultural relationship or an interfaith relationship or a mixed race relationship. You're not alone. People have navigated this, and there's incredible, incredible weddings that can be born out of diversity, which is why we really try to be very intentional about sharing a lot of different photos at once in one vein, in one topic. There's a lot of inspiration for wedding planning out there, but this is certainly a niche in the market that I struggled to find when I was planning our wedding.
That's what I was going to ask you. Did this come out of like feeling alone yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say I felt alone because I had a lot of incredible people kind of go on the journey with us. But when I reached out for different inspiration and was wondering, is it normal to have a number of outfit changes? Will my white family understand the spicy food? Things like that. I didn't have any answers to those questions. Is it okay to wear a white dress and what's colloquially known as henna? And now I know it is because there are other people who do it because I can see it. I'm in the social impact space professionally, and very often we say, you can't be what you can't see. And I really hope that I can give people a way to be what they are truly, authentically, by giving them a place to see these things.
So inspiration in terms of like answers, hey, somebody else did this and they did it this way, but also just inspiration, like representation. You're not the first and only people to do this. Look at all these other beautiful weddings. Look at how happy people are. Like, there's a struggle in figuring out wedding planning, but the end day, you know, while not perfect, we try to make sure everyone knows that there's no such thing as perfect, but is worth all of the work that you put into it.
Absolutely. And I think it's a lot more authentic if you do it the way that resonates with both of you. And it makes the journey easier if you could point to other couples and say, well, it made sense to them because they represent us more than the couples who you see in a lot of the mainstream wedding magazines.
So Lara, you are of a different culture, different religion, brought up that way than Amer, right? Like, can you both
tell us
about your background and your family and growing up?
Yeah, sure thing. I am a kind of descendant of my, you know, foremothers who grew up in Appalachia. I was born and raised here in Atlanta, but have a long history here in the American South. And I was raised Unitarian Universalist, which is a rather small but liberal and vibrant religion that kind of lets you choose your choice as far as spirituality goes. And it was a really great way to grow up and made me very open to dating people of different faiths because I grew to appreciate spirituality in a different way than a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, my family is from Pakistan. We all grew up in South Carolina. And so I also grew up in the American South as well. But obviously with a kind of different cultural as well as religious background, you know, Islam is our religion. And so we kind of grew up going to mosque, or going to a mosque in Greenville. Yeah. Doing the whole Muslim in America thing, especially in a, you know, a small town, in Greenville, South Carolina. And so that, I mean, obviously that shaped my narrative tremendously.
Right.
Yeah.
So backing up a little bit, because I, you know, over the years that we've been doing the podcast, we've received a lot of emails from interfaith couples, different cultures, fusion weddings. And a lot of the complexities and a lot of the stress, and a lot of, you know, oftentimes coming from the parents of both or one of the partners. I wanted to ask you first, you know, how you all met and maybe like how long you were dating. I mean, we obviously want to talk about the wedding part of things a lot, but I'd love to give a little context to the listeners that, you know, they might be able to relate to.
So he is the only Tinder date I've ever been on.
The only one you ever needed.
She is not the only Tinder date I ever went on.
Okay.
We're very much a product of like the apps, man. Yeah.
How long ago was that?
So we dated for about 2 years and then we're engaged for about a year. And then we've been married for about 2 years since then.
That sounds about right.
He does the numbers.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you had the numbers.
So how did you, were any, either of your side family, were they like, whatever, date whoever you want, we're cool with it, we're so excited you're engaged, we're so excited for the wedding? Was it all positive?
Our experience comes from The Big Sick only, that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys watch that?
Oh my God, of course. Well,
I don't know if Michelle saw it, but that's my context.
It is, oh, what a great primer, actually. Yeah, I mean, we watched that while we were dating. And we
so
felt
so cliche that I hope that's not insulting.
No, no, totally. We felt very connected to it. Also like Master of None, there's some episodes from Aziz's first season where we're like, oh my God, that's my life. but for sure, I think on my side, you know, I think my parents, I think my mom specifically always wanted me to probably find somebody within my own like faith or cultural or ethnicity. But she never said no. You know, I think both my parents are very much like, be happy, but, you know, understand that it's just going to be different and you're going to have to navigate a lot of things that other couples don't, you know, by kind of going outside your race, ethnicity, culture, religion, all those things. But they were very positive. And, you know, I will tell you, spoiler alert, Laura's not the first white girl I ever dated. So I think they kind of knew where things were headed.
Like Amer, my parents are very, very liberal and very accommodating. But I really have to give it to my mom. I think she did a lot of soul searching. And, you know, naturally, a lot of people want their kids' lives and grandkids' lives to be easy. And she sees this and she's like, well, this is not the easiest path for you. And, you know, we were thrift shopping one day and she looked over at me and she goes, you know, I don't know if I was quite as woke as I thought I was, you know, and I really respect that she kind of came with me on this journey. And, you know, my parents have always loved Amer. So, you know, I think that there's a tremendous opportunity for growth that everyone in my family took that we didn't even know it was a journey we needed to go on. So it was interesting.
That is interesting. And I think it's lovely. And I can't remember, we were talking the other day, Christy, and we're like, we never get emails of people saying like, you guys, I just wanted to let you know that my wedding planning is just going amazing. I just had to email you to tell you there's no family drama.
Yeah.
My parents are great.
So supportive.
Yeah.
I couldn't do this without them. They're the perfect amount of involved. Yeah. We never get those.
I am sure those exist, but we don't hear about it. You see what I'm saying? But I think that's wonderful. And I also think, Laura, like how awesome your mom, how awesome is she? Like, she's like, you know,
yeah.
I thought I was a lot more, you know, that's great. So, okay. So you had the support of your parents and you did not have to feel that pressure. However, in the process, you were finding there was maybe a lack of resources out there or representation, or what was it that you were, what did you experience there?
Absolutely. I mean, when you get engaged, yay. And then you go through different accounts and hashtags. What can we be? What can I wear? And then I kind of found myself looking into a void of not a whole lot for us. You know, you kind of would cross your fingers and hope that one of the big outlets would feature an Indian bread and maybe you could kind of grab at some of that. But I couldn't find any representation for Muslims and you know, Southern white girls, or, you know, in my account, Blended Bliss, I try really intentionally to feature some cultures that don't get a lot of love. I mean, folks from Uganda and Fiji and all these other cultures and Uyghurs from Northern China, you know, I've featured all of them. And because I think representation is important, because that's something I certainly didn't get. And we are lucky enough to be from, Amer is from a culture of the Indian subcontinent that's very highly represented in a lot of different wedding outlets, because it's beautiful, it's fun, it's interesting, it's, you know, there's a lot of Indian people getting married and it's so exciting.
Yeah.
And so we did have that to fall back on, but there was nothing for the mixing of things generally.
It's been slow to get diversified as an industry anyway, but on top of that, there's almost like a checklist and it's like, okay, now we've put African-American brides on the cover. Okay, now we have a Black bride magazine. Great. Okay, we did it. Guys, we're all fine. Okay, gay couples. Finally, check. The Knot did that. Okay, check. But blended, Muslim, white, like that's lower, it seems, on the list. Like you have to dig more and further. And there's like a lot of people, I think the only thing people would know about an Indian wedding has to do with the dresses and the henna. And that past mm-hmm. that, I mean, Michelle and I know a little more because we've done weddings and we're wedding planners and we try to educate ourselves. But those are the things people would say, like, oh yeah, the sari and the henna. And that's what you guys do, right? Okay, that's the only difference.
It's some choreographed dancing.
Yes, which I love.
As a white woman coming into this, I was not used to tokenism. You know, I look around and as a, you know,
explain what tokenism means.
Ah, yes. This idea of you kind of have picture, if you will, Captain Planet. So you have one of everything and that's enough. You have one person represented and that's your token Asian person. You have one Black person, that's your token Black person. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you have one, look, we have a Black bride. That's our, we got it, you're done with it.
I mean, this is every syndicated comedy now on TV also. So
right,
exactly. Just like take care of the casting and now we did it. So we have no problems.
Yes. You have a gay friend, you don't need two. There's just right. And if there's two, it's a gay show. That's all you get.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a white woman, I'm used to seeing myself represented everywhere, you know, and that I was just kind of shocked. And I'm not going to stand for it. Like no one deserves to live like this. And the shock just kind of, I guess, spurned some action because it's, can I say bullshit?
Yeah. Say bullshit. Yeah.
It's bullshit.
So much. Yeah. My dad at some point, this is a side note, but my dad plays games with my kids, board games, and he's cusses a little in his life, but he's trying to get better. And at one point he stopped himself from like saying, oh, that's bullshit. And he said, that's bullsh. And my kids have taken that and run with it. And so now all the time when I hear them, they're like, come on, man, that's bullsh. And I'm like, you guys, it's better, but it's not great. And you're in trouble. And they're like, what? It's not a real word. And I'm like, so bullsh in our house is like used all the time.
Thanks, Dad.
That's some bullsh all around.
I love it.
We might start doing that.
Yeah.
Do it. Take it. Amer, I was going to ask, since you mentioned your sister and, you know, Lara, as you're talking about, like, we're looking for ourselves, we're looking for what to do. How do we even start? Is your sister married to a Muslim man or woman? And what was she telling you?
She's not married, actually. She's a little bit older than me. She's not married. Aisha, hi, how are you? If you're out there listening. she's just the greatest older sister. She was just a resource constantly.
Got it.
Because, you know, obviously expectations were different for different families and, you know, depending on our backgrounds. And so my sister was more of like the diplomat, like shuttling back and forth. And like, she was a great sounding board and somebody who was like, well, yes, that makes sense. Or that might be too far. She's always been like a diplomat, kind of, not always been, but in this circumstance, she was like a diplomat for us and like shuttling between the parties. And like, you know, she was a great sounding board.
I kind of saw her as a translator to go between our thoughts and expectations and realities. And then her mom's, her parents, the community's thoughts and expectations and realities. So that was really helpful so that, you know, we can really honor Amer's family as much as we honor mine.
So how did planning start? I mean, did you sit down and like list out, like, here's what I know about weddings from my family. Here's what I know about weddings from mine. What do we like? Or God, did you think?
Yeah.
That's a tip.
You should have
put that one down. Yeah. That's number one, friends. I wish we had sat down with each other as well as our parents and said, what are the non-negotiables for you? You know, do we need a bouquet toss? Do we need, you know, biryani? Do we need, you know, all these different things? And that would have given us a much clearer floor plan, if you will, for the adventure.
Yeah, I think had we sat down and talked to our parents also about expectations too, like, I mean, that's what we're essentially talking about, just expectations. Like, what are your, like, I will not negotiate on this kind of point.
Yeah.
Deal breakers.
Like your must-haves versus your, like, oh, you could consider this.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we were all so quick to be cool with each other. And everyone is cool with each other, but we're also quick to be like, oh, everyone will accept everything and I will accept everything and they will accept everything and it'll all be great. Instead of saying, no, actually everyone has expectations. Everyone has hopes and dreams. Like, we should honor that. And, you know, we should all come to the table with what we are hoping for instead of just saying, well, it's going to work out.
Yeah.
So that was a lesson learned. Like, definitely want to start out with, can I ask you, were your parents contributing financially to the wedding?
My parents were kind enough to, they're just absolute legends, y'all. They cut us a check to do with what we would. It didn't cover the whole wedding, but a condition of that is that we seek premarital counseling. They did that with my sister as well. They're like, oh, we'll help you.
Yeah.
But on the under the terms that you go talk to someone, you know, about things that you don't know that you don't know. So
was that the only condition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Amazing and so freaking brilliant.
Yeah,
what was your reaction to that? Were you like, cool, that's great? Or what did you say, Amer?
So I didn't really have any kind of like background with any kind of therapy or counseling or anything like that. And so for me, it was kind of like, what do we need to talk about? but it was wonderful. It was a great experience. And like, I haven't gone through it. I like told everybody, like both of my family as well as hers, like this, you got to do this. Like, this mm-hmm. is a great thing. It really helped us kind of like talk about some things, but also learn how to communicate with each other long-term. So
I would say the only stated expectation, you know, we didn't cover the fact that she expected printed invites, which is fine. But I wish I had known before we set out on the journey, but she did kind of come to the table and say, this is my expectation for that.
How did you find a counselor or a program? A lot of times those are like through maybe the officiant or the church or the synagogue might know. How did you guys do that?
I think it was my mom's therapy group. Honestly, someone who's in the same practice. We found her. She was great. She specializes in relationship counseling. And much to Amir's chagrin, she's a former lawyer. So gave me all of his tips and tricks.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's got so it. True. Good.
Yeah.
That's so great. Okay. So
we're big fans of therapy.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. It's a great way to start off a married life.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So Laura, your mom gave some money. Amer, did your parents contribute at all?
So sort of. There were some things that they were willing to pay for and some things were just kind of on their terms, I think is the best way to say it. And I mean, we'll get into details about like how we eventually had to navigate, I think, some of the fusion aspects. But there were things like that they were specifically, like I said, willing to pay for, like events, and then other things are like, that's on you guys, or yeah, you guys figure that out kind of thing.
I think the difference is that my parents cut a check, but his parents were very much into the experiences of it. So his mom quite literally quit her job and went to Pakistan to buy wedding outfits that were bespoke for he and his groomsmen. I'm not even kidding. So, and that's not something we asked for, but she was like, she was going to do it, you know, and that was great. It was amazing. And then she took it upon herself to work with a lot of folks in the community and the family to throw us a reception for a lot of the families in Greenville that she wanted to incorporate into our celebration. Yeah. So it was that kind of, she wanted to be very involved because I think that's very much a cultural experience in a lot of different cultures that are not Western. And so it was, you definitely kind of saw that interaction in our parents in the way that they were involved and wanted to be involved.
That's so cool. That's great.
So initially when we talked, Laura, you said the idea maybe for a second was that you would have what we're calling a fusion wedding where you can get pretty much, we'll just get it all into one day. We don't want to ask too much of our guests. We don't want to drag this out. It feels self-indulgent, all the things that like young career people might think. And then you told me that you quickly realized that's not possible. Why did you realize that? And then let's get into the wedding part? Like, how, what did it turn into?
I was a sweet summer child. I didn't know all of the expectations and the fun things, but also the kind of duty bound things that come with both different cultures. You want to?
Yeah, I think, so Laura, I think was, I'm not trying to speak for you, Laura, but I think I think that when Laura thought about fusion, she was thinking about maybe like one day of events and how we're going to fuse that together. Whereas like in my background in culture, I was like, well, of course it's going to be 4 to 5 days of celebrations. Like, and we'll just fuse things along as we go. and so that was like, when, again, it kind of goes back to expectations, but also like how it ultimately wasn't really that. I mean, like, it didn't really work in the ways that we thought it would. Fusion wise, we had different concepts of fusion as well.
I think too, to your point, if it is fusion, it is a compromise on many different levels. If it's going to be one day, it's not a compromise. That's a Western wedding. And I, you know, didn't realize that.
Yes. And the things like micro events or all the events that happen in 5 days take hours. I mean, really, it's like, it wouldn't even be possible to do it all in a 24-hour, and who, you know, that's not how people party anyway.
No,
but
yeah,
just like starting to, you if you had done this conversation first and been like, okay, so what is the expectations for a Pakistani Islam wedding celebration? Like, what are your parents and cousins and everybody expecting? You would have just on that conversation alone been like, okay, clearly that's too many hours to also get in, like, you know, another ceremony in a white dress and a bouquet toss.
Well, I think I was very precious about my family and trying to protect everyone from wedding burnout and feeling self-indulgent. But I am very lucky in that I have a lot of people who not only I think genuinely like us, but are also excited to experience new cultural things and kind of go along for the ride. I mean, my grandma got the henna, which is called mehndi in Pakistan. It's like, you know, people were in, they were all in, which was really exciting to see.
And I wasn't really concerned about wedding burnout whatsoever, because I was like, well, if they love us, then they'll show up.
It's my time.
Yeah. But that's also a reflection of like where I'm coming from, where it's like a couple of days and you just like, you know, tighten your belt and like, you know, straighten your tie. We're in it for like, you know, 4 to 5 days of celebration. So again, goes to expectations there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. We also, I wanted to make sure everyone was like well fed and well watered, which they were the whole time. So we tried to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah.
So I love that you feel like, and you recognize that your family, Laura, and friends were like, no, we want, like, we're into it. It's almost like giving people permission to not underestimate your get, like, present them with all the things that are part of the celebration, which is a celebration based on love. And chances are you'll be pleasantly surprised that people are like, that was awesome. And what's next?
It was such a gift. Like, people I didn't even know knew anyone who was of, you know, the subcontinent persuasion showed up in like full sari regalia. I was like, Liz, what are you? Okay. All right. Girl, come through.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to see how everyone kind of threw themselves into it.
So what did you do to represent each culture? Like, was it based on event and day, or did you mix everything, like all the events?
Well, I think the easiest thing that you can do when you want to like fuse stuff is food. Like, food is,
I was gonna ask about food. Oh, what did you do with the food?
Like, food is one of the easiest. Like, well, we definitely did like had different events on different days and kind of fused even events themselves together, but food was like the easiest starting point for us. Like, because, you know, like, food is, it's a way to introduce people to just delicious things. And so, Laura, if you want to like jump in here, but I mean, at the wedding itself, or not the wedding, it's, well, one of our weddings, which is again, a larger conversation, but I would say our first wedding, we had like donuts for dessert, but we also had like food that was more like biryani, which is like a baked like rice dish. Things that are a little more Pakistani in nature, but our starters and, you know, our past place, I'm forgetting the word.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. Those were, you know, a little more like Western or American, a little more continental. And so that was, I think, the easiest thing for us to do
I think one thing we could do is we sort of took the run of show, if you will, for a Western wedding and a Pakistani wedding, and we kind of lined them up, and we figured out the way we can sort of make two events mesh into one. Because if one thing I've learned through Blended Bliss certainly is there are ways in which every culture punctuates these kinds of events. So many cultures have a kind of pre-wedding celebration. It could be a mehndi in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, or it can be a rehearsal dinner in the States and in Europe. So we took those two and we combined them into one. So we had everyone come for a nice, like a sit-down Southern fried chicken dinner at which there are toasts. And then after that, we did a lot of different Pakistani traditions that were kind of typical of a mehndi that you would have if you went to an Indian wedding. So that way we kind of got to see the way that a lot of weddings all over the world are very similar.
That's really cool. That's awesome.
And the mehndi itself, like just so you guys know, it's like a traditional event where the bride applies henna to parts of her body, like arms and feet. And it's very decorative and very intricate. And so there's an application of mehndi, and then there's actual like mehndi as an event. And the event itself is like, it's very showy and fun, lots of bright colors and, you know, everything you expect from like an Indian Pakistani wedding where, you know, lots of, you know, greens and pinks and oranges and yellows. And, it's something where the families can come and like bless the bride and the groom with like prayers, but also like donate to charity too. And like feed them, like literally spoon feed treats to the bride and groom, which is a lot of fun. And so we were able to do that like directly after the rehearsal, which was fun for everybody.
Yeah, I think between the heady combination of lots of bourbon cocktails and, you know, macaroni and cheese and fun toast to start, and then a big party with Bollywood music and, you know, dancing performances by family members. I mean, it's kind of hard to say no to that.
Yeah,
that sounds so fun. How many guests did you have?
Well, it depends. That's kind of part of the difficulty of.
How about this? Well, why don't we take a step back and like give them the overview? I think you might understand like a little bit more about like the run of events that way.
Yeah, we had to compartmentalize the guests for all the different events because we couldn't have 175 people roll through every single thing.
Okay. So start with, what is it, Thursday? Did it start on everything started on a Thursday?
It sure did. So what we did was have a big mehndi, which is in the case of the application of the henna. It was a big girls' night with all the women in his family and all the women in my family at my parents' house. We had snacks. We hit the bar afterwards. My grandmother and his great aunt.
Just so you know, it sounded like you said we had sex.
I just heard I did not hear that. You're in a mood.
I swear you said we had sex. I was like,
we definitely said sex
and the bar.
Very virginal. About
that. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
So yeah, we did the henna. We hit the bar afterwards, and my grandmother made fast friends. She was, you know, past her 80s. And she made fast friends with Amir's great aunt who had flown from Pakistan, and they spent the night kind of huddled in the corner as matriarchs are wont to do and kind of taking it in and, you know, talking. And that was really special, and we all got henna'd up, even my grandmother. And
that's awesome.
It was really fun. It was a true girls' night, which was really fun. And then I'm gonna talk about the next night.
Yeah, and so then we had like a rehearsal dinner at a restaurant here in Atlanta. And we just kind of did the normal stuff. And I said the normal stuff, cause I've been to so many like, Caucasian or Christian weddings, but like, we basically did speeches. Like there were a couple, like, you know, toasts and things like that. And kind of had an open mic. We had some awesome Southern food. And it was just a way for everybody to kind of get together and mingle. And then after that, like the same night, we did what I told you guys earlier was about the mehndi event, which is like the actual dancing and like the bright colors and, you know, having family members come up to you with treats and like give you blessings and stuff like that. So that was really cool. Yeah.
And then the next day,
was there a rehearsal?
Not really.
That was actually, okay. Yeah, we rehearsed, right?
Well, like, oh yeah, sure. We
low
did.
Key. We kind of walked okay. here and walked there.
Like the morning.
Which
of,
ceremony was rehearsed?
Like the both? Traditional walk down the aisle ceremony was rehearsed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so that was all actually the next day, which is a Saturday, December 29th, 2018. And we had a heck of a day. We did a rehearsal and then we had a Muslim ceremony, which you want to get into that with an imam. It was a smaller group, really just family, but it was at the same venue, which had a lot of different rooms, which was really helpful for that.
Yeah. So the nikah that we had before our civil ceremony, it's in the same location. It was just, really close family and really close friends. And the bridal and groom parties. And basically we had an imam come, which is basically like a pastor, if you go to church, but he came and gave a blessing to us as a couple. And then we also signed a marriage contract, which, you know, I think if you're familiar with like a ketubah in Judaism, it's very similar to that, where it's like kind of like I do's, but in written contract form.
Receipts. Get those receipts.
And it kind of dates back, you know, obviously to the very start of religion and like, you know, probably gets a little bit from Judaism too. But it's there to like, you know, protect, you know, female, the wife's rights and like, you know, in case of divorce or, you know, somebody dying, as well as to like, make sure that the, you know, both sides' marital obligations are like clear kind of. And so that was interesting because our imam was a little more conservative than we wanted him to be. And then we went into the actual like civil ceremony.
And so for that, we incorporated some Unitarian Universalist traditions that I really liked, including a real big focus on community. And so there was a call and response moment, which was really nice. We were married by an incredible man who was a judge that Amir worked with, who had actually integrated some schools here in the South when he was a young boy. And so it was nice to have that legacy of Southern history there with us. Just a remarkable, remarkable man. So we were lucky to have him in that and, you know, that kind of incorporation of culture there. And after that, we were able to, it's funny to hear Amir describe it because for me, it was just straight up like, this is a Pakistani feast. This is so, you know, this is wild for my family. But for your family, they're like, why is this so bland? Yeah, but we had a lot of good, like kind of Pakistani-ish food.
Yeah. Trying Pakistani to meet in the middle and please everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we actually surprised everyone with a choreographed dance that went from B.B. King into Bollywood.
No, Ray Charles.
No way. Who came up with that compilation and who taught it to you?
We had the idea together of like a surprise for everybody. Like we didn't tell anybody else. We went and like found a dance instructor and kind of told her what our vision was. And we found the music and then we like rehearsed the actual moves. So it was pretty cool. Yeah.
She's a very intense Russian woman. So everything was very, very timed.
Yeah.
It's great.
I love that.
I love that too. That's really cool.
Yeah. And then we had like the traditional, like, you know, dinner and dancing and speeches and all that kind of thing.
So all in all, you started on a Thursday, you ended on a Sunday?
Saturday for that part. It was Thursday for through Saturday. Yeah. But if you want to share with them.
Yeah. Sorry. I was completely off the last event there. We had another kind of like reception, a second reception in Greenville, South Carolina, which is where I grew up. And this is like mostly thrown by my parents. They wanted a reception that was like going to be welcoming to some of the more conservative people that we grew up with. Like, obviously we've been talking about alcohol and like, you know, all this stuff and like just partying and stuff like that. And that wasn't always like how we grew up. We have a lot of friends of ours that are, you know, very deeply religious. And so we wanted to find a way, and especially for my mom and dad, they wanted to find a way to include those people in this big day, the people who saw us grow up. And so mom was really, you know, excited and big on having this second reception in Greenville. which happened on New Year's Eve, at a nice hotel there. And it's kind of like, it was like a presentation of the couple to the community. And then we just kind of hung out afterwards and celebrated New Year's Eve. And so that was cool.
So that's 2 days, 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah. I think there was about one solid day of, no, maybe a day and a half of between the civil ceremony, I would say, the NICA and civil ceremony, and then the reception in Greenville.
It was great, though. I highly recommend it to anyone who just wants to show up to a wedding that involves them. It was fantastic. I really appreciated it.
Yeah. My mom had kind of already got some things squared away, really. So we just kind of, it was like plug and play. They're like, show up, wear this, and walk around, and you're good.
So this was for the Morgan, sir, I want to understand. This was on, was this on actual New Year's Eve?
Yes.
So did you, how long were you there? How late were you there?
Well, everybody, my family had booked the hall from like 8 p.m. until 1 in the morning. But most people that we were concerned about, like, you know, the sensitive, not sensitive folks, but maybe more religious folks, they ended up leaving at like 10:30.
And so
really after 10:30, it just turned into like a second reception.
A party.
Okay.
Where all of our friends were there and we just celebrated New Year's Eve and we had a DJ and it was awesome.
And I tried
How
to moderate.
Fun.
Yeah. I tried to moderate expectations. I was like, girls, this is not mandatory. Like, I get it. It's New Year's. It's in Greenville. Like, it's, you know, if you want to come, that's fine. They rolled in with all their bangles on. It was incredible. And we, like, you know, after all the delightful guests went home, just, you know, popping bottles and having fun with your people. Cause it's a kind of a unique thing to do for New Year's, I guess.
So your parents were the hosts and you were the guests of honor in that one more.
I think that's the best way to say it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Did you have an event planner for any of these events? Did you hire anybody?
We had a fantastic vendor that we worked with, Sun in My Belly, which was the host. It was our caterer for everything. Except for the Thursday event. They were the host of our rehearsals in our main D, and they provided us a day of coordinator who just turned out to be our best friend. And that was great, but otherwise it was something we really did ourselves. She was great for day of, and, you know, we could talk through things, and it was just kind of, we had a small army of people, Michelle. We had, you know, the dance general, and then we had, you know, the food maestro, and then we had, you know, a lot of incredible people we were lucky to work with. Our photographer, Colonel, was fantastic, and so we had a little army of people who were helping us
navigate it,
get married. Yeah.
And then for Greenville, I think they used just the hotel planner, and the hotel planner, I think, was because it wasn't like a lot of moving parts. It really was like food, invite some people, show up and look nice. And so I think planning wise, it wasn't as intricate as what we did in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And Lara, how many different and wardrobe changes do you have? Like, how many outfits did you have? Did you have a different outfit for every single day, or some instances two outfits a day?
So we got it to one outfit a day. I am extraordinarily lucky that Amir's parents are so generous, and his mom also provided for me when she went to Pakistan for his outfits. Ooh. I know. Those things are heavy, but you feel like $1 million.
And you look it too.
Yeah, it's great. So I wore outfits that she had brought back from Pakistan for the rehearsal dinner and for the Greenville event. And then I got a gorgeous kind of this form, not too form-fitting, but kind of bedazzled Jenny Packham dress here in Atlanta that I wore on our wedding day. And I was quite frankly nervous. I was going to just look like a yard sale because I didn't see his outfits and I didn't see the bridesmaids' outfits and I didn't see it all together. But, you know, I think it goes to show that we're all in sync because it really looked great.
Yeah, the colors were phenomenal. And my mom, I had different outfits for each event, but on the civil ceremony NICA day in Atlanta. I'm like giving the title as well as the location just to be sure. But yeah.
Very good.
So for that day, I wore like a cream kurta, like you would say sherwani, but it's like the best way to say it, it's like kind of a tunic. And if you've ever seen Game of Thrones, it's what like Lord Varys would wear. It's like goes almost from like shoulder down, or like even Tyrion, like all the way down to the knees, kind of like one kind of thing with like big buttons in the middle. And it just, there's work on the actual outfit itself that's like very like intricate.
Is it Nehru collar?
Yes. Yeah. Hey, look at you. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I know a thing or two about just that, really.
Yeah.
So is that all of the outfits you wore, or that the men involved all had that same?
Yes.
Okay.
Mostly that. Yes. And obviously mine were a little more intricate, and my groomsmen had a little more like lighter cloth and different colors. So yeah, it was awesome.
Any other things you're glad you did? And then what would you do differently? I know we talked about that at the top, but maybe getting to those.
I mean, I'm glad we went for it. It's hard. And it was, you know, there are a lot of, frankly, moments of tension and, you know, communication stumbles, but ultimately there is so much more joy than there was frustration. And it was absolutely worth it.
I think
this is an important point, Laura and Amer, is that it wasn't like it was all smooth sailing. Like like you just said, like there were some bumps in the road and communication and a little frustration. And what, an example?
Oh, I mean, I definitely like just in the guest list about like, you know, who gets the invite. I mean, that was definitely like something very stressful, because we had, you know, for, you know, in a lot of, I was gonna say brown, but like, you know, Pakistani Indian communities, when you have a wedding, it's like 500 people, you know, that's like a small wedding.
We
and so, so for my family, for the civil ceremony in Nikah in Atlanta, like when I told them what the caps were, they were like, what? Like, that's it? Like, that was kind of stressful, but ultimately it was the perfect number of people for that event. And it worked
which
out.
Was, I don't think we talked about numbers for each event.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
So, no, I was just going to elaborate. And we actually went up to the suburbs here in Atlanta to ask a Pakistani place to cater our wedding. And when we told them that we were going to only be serving 175 people, they're like, no, we're not traveling for
it's
that.
It's not worth it.
So wow. Yeah. They're like, that's silly. It's what, like, is that? A birthday party?
Like two people. That's it. A couple pots. What?
Yeah. So we had, I forget the numbers, it was a couple of years ago, but we had about, I want to say 50 people to the rehearsal dinner / Mandy, maybe 25 ladies at the Thursday girls' night henna party, and then 175 to our civil ceremony and Nikah.
And I think in Greenville, I think it was an additional, I'd say 150 to 175, but mostly new people. Like, I think there was a core group of family and friends that came with us from Atlanta to Greenville, and then add on the extra other, you know, other folks.
Most of the community
yeah.
that his parents have developed in Greenville.
Yeah.
That is small. That is small for your culture.
Yeah.
Was that because you consciously made that decision, or was that because there was a lot of people from out of town?
I think we were consciously kind of forced to make the decision. We looked at our budget, and then we also thought about how big of a wedding we wanted.
We just realized that, like, we're just going to make everyone kind of happy.
Yeah.
And then it's going to make us very happy.
Yeah. And that gets back to like, just that being a stressor, you know, like everybody had very different expectations about what the size of the wedding should be.
Yeah. I think that's also, I mean, with most couples, it's like, well, you have a lot more people on your list than on my list. And I don't want this to turn into like your wedding or whatever, like it having that kind of equal.
Yeah. And that was,
which is hard.
We had to have that conversation because, like,
yeah,
I like love people and I have way too many friends.
Well, I think the thing is we didn't expect a lot of our family to come, and they all rolled through. So Amer had people fly in from Japan, from, you know,
Bangladesh, Pakistan. Yeah. India.
And so it was, you know, and I've got a big family too as well. And, I do have friends. So it was a...
No, I know. I mean, I didn't say you didn't have friends. I was just like, I have a lot of close friends that I've kept up with since high school. And so it's,
He had some tougher cuts than I did, definitely.
Yeah, sometimes it's a matter of tiers, you know, and when everybody in tier one is like RSVP, yes, all the way, you're like, ah, shit, we're not going to get to tier five. And that's bullshit.
And Christy, people, I actually did exactly the tier system in my invite list. I like tier one, tier two, tier three, and essentially everyone from tier one said yes. And that was a big shock for me, like especially people who were really far away.
Well, and I think I love being on tier two in a wedding. I'm like, listen, I got 10 days to find a dress and like, I'm not doing anything fun anyway. I'm going to roll through. It's going to be so much fun. And so it's like our tier twos, they were limited, but they were all like, yes, we made the list, you know? So I think that
enthusiastic.
There's no shame in that tier two, tier three game. I love it.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, tiers, and because we always say A list, B list, you're going tier one, tier two. It feels like a little bit nicer to say tiers, Christy.
It does, isn't it? It feels like it's like a consultant way of saying, you know, A, B, and C.
You're not an A lister.
Yeah, we're gonna pull you up from the bench.
Yeah,
you could go with like varsity and JV. That's also a good thing because everyone gets to play.
No, I still like tiers.
For somebody, if your parents maybe were used to or expecting, like, we're inviting 400, we're inviting the guy who cut your hair when you were a kid because he cut your hair. That's like, that's what I mean with tiers. It's like, yes, you could invite all those people, but it's more important that friends and family are there. So,
and having the bigger second event, let my parents do exactly that. Like literally our mechanic came to our second wedding, like the one in Greenville, like the guy he's awesome. He's worked in all of our cars the last 5 years. And I was really glad he was there, but you know, it's like exactly what you're saying. It's like everybody got an invite kind of thing.
So. And he brought his whole family.
It seems like that last event in the different location and, you know, a day later solved a lot of, not problems, but it was the solution to many things and gave your parents the opportunity to host their way, even though it wasn't as like structured.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I know that it doesn't really sound like a compromise that way when you have two different events, you know, with kind of two different hosts and perspectives, but it really, that is what allowed us to have, I think, a successful wedding where people did not have their feelings hurt. That way, like, you know, it just helped with everything, like both navigating the cultural aspects, navigating our guest list, and then overall kind of control with our parents and like just trying to balance all that out. Like, I know it was expensive and I know it was, you know, hard to pull off like logistically, but man, that second event really was the one that like, I think helped bring everything together to where everybody was just truly happy, you know?
Mm-hmm. So.
I have probably a very unpopular opinion, but ladies and gentlemen, this is not your day. You don't spend your day double bagged in Spanx paying $100 for people you don't know to eat a plate. Like, I loved my wedding and it was great and everyone came together to celebrate us. But I under no circumstances thought that the entire thing was going to be about Amer and I. A wedding to us is where people come together in a community to recognize your union and to celebrate you together and the people you are bringing to the marriage. My day is drinking wine in the bathtub. You know, it's a great day. But so we didn't have the expectation that it was gonna be all about us. We understand that, especially if you have people who are financially investing in something, it's gonna not be about you. And that's okay. If I wanted it to be about me, I'd elope in the bathtub. And that's just kind of how we approached it. And ultimately I think that was a successful approach.
Yeah. It's almost like the three characters and, you know, maybe subsequent marriage therapy, your therapist might mention something like this. I know mine did, where it's like, there's you, Christy, and your husband, Lance, and the marriage. That is a third entity. It is separate from both of you. And to look at a wedding weekend or a wedding day that way as well, other people will have ideas about how it's going to go, and compromising, like, it's part of the deal because everyone's going to experience this and it is your village, although very big, you know, on that second party, but your village acknowledging and celebrating the journey you're about to take, that's different than you two as individuals. So I think it's a healthy mindset to go into it, recognizing that like the wedding is its own thing. And, you know, our advice all day long can be like, do what you want. And that we stand by that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it is all about you on your wedding day. It is two families and two cultures and two worlds coming together for a journey, a specific journey that is different than the one you've already been on as a couple. So I think that's a really healthy way to look at it, because it can, I don't, release a little bit of the pressure for you in the planning process. Like, you know, it doesn't have to all go a certain way. The important part is we're all there.
Absolutely did. Yeah.
And I think you've got to honor that village. Like ultimately that village made you what you are, and you can choose to divest from toxic parts of that village. And that could be the whole kit and caboodle, or that could be parts of it that are unhealthy, but ultimately your village is here to celebrate you, and you are your village. And so you want to get back to that. And in a multicultural fusion, interracial, multi-ethnic wedding, you just have villages that look a little different.
Very good. Well, we just think you're both lovely, and I'm really glad you were able to come on with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story. And thank you for your Instagram profile. I think that it's lovely, and it's an example of like what most of the world wants to see and what most people out there it's representative of. So I just love it. I love the story, and I really do appreciate y'all reaching out and taking the time to talk to our listeners and to us.
It is an honor and a privilege to do that work. And thank you so much for having us on the show and chatting with you lovely ladies.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thanks for having us, guys.
All right. We'll see you guys later. Take care.
Too. Take care.
Bye. Bye.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Christy Matthews, and Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available for free on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at The Big Wedding Planning Podcast, and be sure to use the hashtag PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join us and our amazing members. Just search The Big Wedding Planning Podcast Community on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 415-723-1625, and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.